Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender and just thrilled today to be able to talk about a subject that is close to my heart. We're going to talk about mothers and sons. As you know, if you've listened to the program for any amount of time, I have two boys, 14 and a 10-year-old, and I'll often talk about them on the air, even if they don't like it. So we'll try to do a little bit of that today. Well, as mothers, you know, we all love our sons, but what if sons need more than love in order to thrive and become the man that we hope they can be? Well, my guest for today argues that it's not just love, but respect that's the key to a boy's heart. And respect from his mother can make all the difference in the relationship and all the difference in his life once he leaves the house as well. So why is respect so important for a son? And how can we as mothers make sure that we are setting our sons up to succeed? What role does our response to their behavior have in giving them confidence and assurance? Well, let me introduce you to my guest. He's been on the show before, but I'm going to introduce him properly for those who might have missed our last conversation. Dr. Emerson Eggerich is an internationally known expert in male-female relationships. He's the founder of Love and Respect Ministries. He and his wife, Sarah, present Love and Respect conferences all across the country and as well on video and online to thousands of people each year. Dr. Eggerich has a PhD in child and family ecology and a Master of Divinity degree from the University of Dubuque Theological Seminary. He was a senior pastor of Trinity Church in Lansing, Michigan for almost 20 years. And his new book, Mother and Son, The Respect Effect, expands this concept of how love and respect are intimately connected in the bond between mother and son. Welcome, Dr. Eggerich.
Thank you, Joe. What an introduction. Excellent. I appreciate all that you just said there.
Well, it's true. I mean, the first time we had you on, we talked about love and respect in the family. That was the first time I got to learn the concept of love and respect. And I'm so happy that you've expanded it to this mother-daughter or mother-son relationship, because I have sons, so I get to have a personal stake in this as well. You first introduced this concept of love and respect, this crazy cycle, as you call it, as it applies to husbands and wives. So the last time you were here, we kind of talked about that as well. Can you explain what that cycle is and then how it applies specifically to mothers and sons?
Well, we talk about the crazy cycle to mean that without love, a wife tends to react in a way that feels disrespectful to her husband. She's not trying to be disrespectful. She's hurt or upset about something, and she reacts as a way of trying to get a message through to him. I'm hurting right now. I don't think you were sensitive or loving. But when she reacts in a way that appears disrespectful to her husband. And when he feels disrespected, he ends up reacting in a way that feels unloving to her. And one of the reasons that love and respect is so important is that the University of Washington studied 2,000 couples for 20 years, and they said, we now know the two key ingredients for successful relationships. And when those two ingredients are present, the marriage succeeds. And when they are not present, the marriage will fail. And it's love and respect. It's the attitude. Many think if we didn't have sex problems, money problems, in-law problems, health issues, whatever, that we'd have a great relationship, that these stressors, if they could be removed, we'd be happy. And there's a degree of truth to that. But really, it's the hostility and contempt, the lack of love and respect that we show toward each other when we're dealing with those stresses. That's what makes the wife vulnerable. It's not the fact that you're financially behind. It's the hostility and lack of love the husband displays when he's communicating his upset about the financial situation, and she personalizes that. Or if she says, you know, if you'd make more money, you know, and that is interpreted by him as disrespectful. And so the constants are the lack of love and respect that's the undoing. And if we don't understand that, we're going to get on this crazy cycle. And one of the things that the University of Washington said is that even though we all need love and respect equally, there is a gender difference. For instance, 85% of those who stonewall withdraw during a marital conflict is the husband. And the women were asked, what did they feel when their husbands withdrew and stonewall and refused to talk? And the women said, it feels like an act of hostility. She could not imagine shutting down over what she felt is just a minor criticism. And so he, though, was asked, you know, hey, why are you shutting down? because she was criticizing, and ongoing criticism feels like contempt for who I am as a human being. Because the vast majority of women would criticize, complain, the vast majority of men would withdraw and stonewall. And each interpreted that through this gender grid. She's feeling unloved, you know, when he does that. He's feeling disrespected when she does that. And so that explains why perhaps God's word says what it says in Ephesians 5:33, that a husband must love his wife, and a wife must see to it that she respect her husband. Not respect his bad behavior, but respectfully confront it. Or both need to recognize that during conflict, we have this proclivity to react in a way that undermines the need the other person has. So without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love, and this baby starts to spin.
And it seems like it spins out of control, doesn't it? Not only with husbands and wives, but I was imagining just as I was reading the book, oh my goodness, I hadn't thought about that I'm the mother of a son, and the way I react to him might cause the same crazy cycle.
Well, the question on the table is the man in the boy? I mean, we all know the woman is in the girl. I mean, the nurturing nature of the female, all the research is off the charts. I mean, the caregiving dimension of a woman, women can't not care. Mm-hmm. They care deeply, they care pervasively, and they don't want to stop caring. They just want men to be more caring like they are. But you see the little girl with the doll, and the playing with the doll, and the feeding of the doll. This is so common that we don't even pay attention to it. But we know that there is this caring, nurturing element within her. The woman is in that little girl. But we've not done a good job of trying to figure out what does it mean for the man to be in the boy. And we have really a disfavorable feeling that there are narcissistic attitudes within the boy, the arrogance and ego. And we don't necessarily interpret it correctly. And one of the points we're making in the book is that a man has a need to feel respected for who he is as a human being apart from his performance. I mean, for instance, on the marriage thing, we asked 7,000 people this question. When you're in a conflict with your spouse, do you feel unloved at that moment or disrespected? Joe, 83% of the men said they feel disrespected. Mm. 72% of the women said they feel unloved. That's as different as pink is from blue, as male is from female. But we have a tendency to say, well, men are egotistical, because the women are not intending to be disrespectful. It's a marginal issue at best. And so this is really narcissistic on the part of the male. But at the same time, every man who listens to me knows that we serve and we die for honor. This is highly motivational to us. We don't see it as egotistical. We see it as the very thing that causes us to throw ourselves on a hand grenade in our attempt to save our buddies in time of war. It's the honorable thing, and it's very motivating. In Aurora, Colorado, where that guy opened up fire in that theater, many of the feminist media people were stunned when they found out that three of the boyfriends threw themselves on their girlfriends and saved those girls' lives. Those girls walked out of that theater. Those three boys were carried out of those theater dead. And the commentators was, what's with this? There wasn't one man who wondered about that. And yet how many of them were in a fight when they came into that theater because he forgot to give her a Hallmark card on their fifth month of dating, you know, there, yet he then literally died. And Jesus said, no greater love is a man than this, that he lay down his life for his friend. Even Shawnee Feldhahn did a national research, and the question was asked of 400 American males, random sample, would you men rather be left alone and unloved in the world, or be viewed as disrespected and inadequate as a human being? And almost 80% of the men said they'd rather be left alone and unloved in the world. We don't have a sweet spot when you tell us, you know what, you're inadequate as a human being, and I don't respect you because of it, because you're failing to love me, and I feel isolated and alone from you. Mm-hmm. And when that message is there, every man will withdraw and shut down. 85% of them will.
Mm. So when mothers are interested in disciplining or correcting or loving their boys, how does this message translate to them?
Well, that's exactly the point then. The boy will process and interpret that behavior on the part of mom in the same way. And we can explain that because she's not intending to be disrespectful. And furthermore, let me insert, most mothers listening say, wait a minute, you're talking about me respecting my boy? He needs to be respecting me. Emerson, you are out to lunch here. Well, that's the love and respect in the family book, where we go 300 pages on how to coach your sons and daughters to be more honoring and respectful of you. I get that. I believe in that. But there's an innocent mistake that mothers make. For instance, the University of Washington again said when women are upset, the hand on the hip, the scolding finger, the sigh, the rolling of the eyes, the head goes back, and when estrogen kicks in, as they point their pointed figure, words of contempt just spill out so naturally. But women do that because they're upset. And if they do that toward their teen daughter, she intuitively knows. So mom on a Tuesday night is upset with her teen daughter, vents at her. They end up on the bed, legs crossed, talking for the next half hour. And then the daughter says, Mom, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Mother says, No, honey. You need to forgive me. I was way out of line. Will you forgive me? And they both forgive each other. They hug each other. They start being witty and make each other laugh a little bit. And they go on and they're good until the next conflict. The very next night, Joe, that mother vents the same way with her teen boy. And he shuts down and withdraws because there's a pink and blue difference. Brain research has pointed out that young teenage girls go nuts. They are stressed out when at high school they're not liked and connected. When they feel disconnected and disliked, oh boy, you've got a problem. Mm-hmm. Boys don't necessarily concern themselves with that. What sends them through the roof is if they feel that you don't respect them. The brain research points this out. But the problem is we've been marginalizing that sentiment in the boy as egotistical, as I referenced earlier. So what happens then is a mom, when she negatively reacts, those gestures of contempt that the University of Washington referred to them as, the dark eyes, the sour look, the pointed finger, hand on the hips, when she's upset with him, the daughter interprets mother correctly. But the boy thinks, you know, you're just using this topic as another opportunity to send me a message that you find me inadequate as a human being. You don't respect me because I'm not who you think I ought to be, and that is like you.
Hmm. But that's obviously not the message that moms want to convey to their boys, whether they are, you know, 10 years old or whether they're adolescence. So what kind of responses can communicate respect and still get the message across that maybe they could have behaved a little better or made some better choices?
Oh, excellent question. And that's why I say mothers must not now move into shame. It's very important that we not take this, oh, I'm a failure as a mother, because women are so sensitive to being the best that they can be that when they hear this information, it comes at them sideways and they think, oh, no, I'm a horrible mother. And there's a shutdown and a fear that overcomes them. Mothers love to love and they need to continue to love. But one of the things that we're challenging mothers with is meet the boy's need for respect. And how do you do that? Well, you can do it negatively. You don't have to be this perfect mother. You're spitting mad at him. He's done something again, and boys will do it again. I went to military school from age 13 to 18 for obvious reasons. I was sent off to military school. Boys are going to irritate us. They're going to annoy us. They are risk takers. They do things. They don't listen as well. They're not as sensitive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you can say something like this, you know, when you're very upset. I'm not trying to show you disrespect when I confront your misbehavior. I'm seeking to address the issue at hand, okay? I do not respect what you did, but that differs from my belief in you and the respect I feel for the man I envision you will become. Let's take 5 minutes to calm down and revisit this matter respectfully. So, Joe, one of the things we're talking about is using what I call respect talk. Just use the word disrespect in this case. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, and he'll stay engaged. Because what you're doing is you're now neutralizing the way in which he's misinterpreting you. And so if you use that word, he now knows that that's not your intent.
Well, you have a very helpful acronym, Emerson, that gives moms kind of tips on how to respond to our boys that can communicate both love and respect. And I'd love to visit that just on the other side of this break so we can get some real practical help to how we can maybe do this better to communicate an air of respect to our sons, but still be able to offer both discipline, understanding, and instruction. So we'll be right back after this break. I'm talking to Emerson Eggerich today. He's written a great book called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. We'll talk more about that and maybe how we can, as moms, do a good job of not only correcting but respecting our boys so that they can turn into respectable men as well. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today I'm very fortunate to be talking to Dr. Emerson Eggerich. He's written a great book called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. We're talking about this love and respect cycle. It's a crazy cycle that sometimes we can get on, not only as husbands and wives, but as mothers and sons as well, and how we can get off that crazy cycle by understanding and respecting a boy's need to be respected. Emerson, you have just laid out a great acronym called GUIDES that gives moms an opportunity to learn how to respond rather than react to something that our boys might do that kind of disappoints us.
Well, yeah, and we can look at that. And I wanted just to highlight the fact that, you know, mothers long to connect with their boys. This is a virtue that God has created in a mother. She longs to connect. You know, women will say with each other, about our marriage, we're connecting like never before, or I really feel connected with my children. And they can feel very connected with their daughters a lot of times because as females, they just get each other. You know, the XYXX chromosome, there's just a sense. But when it comes to boy, it sometimes feels like they're navigating in a foreign country, and the whole thing seems different, particularly from age 4 to 40. That little precious baby isn't there, and so there is this disappointment in her heart. She's wanting to connect, but her son doesn't seem to engage her in the same way that the daughter would engage her. Mm-hmm. There is this frustration, and she feels inadequate. She feels like she's failing. So one of the things that we're doing today is we're not trying to shame mothers over this idea that they have failed to meet their boy's need for respect. Instead, this needs to be seen as a tool that will enable this sense of connection. And also, boys are very forgiving. Boys do compartmentalize. They don't take things because they know mom loves them. And that love will override a ton of mistakes. So the mother who's listening today who has thought, you know, I've really blown it here, hey, boys are very forgiving. And they'll adjust very quickly if you just simply begin to do what I say in this book, use a few vocabulary words differently, and the boy will just be highly energized. He's ready to move forward. He's not wanting to talk about all those past moments and what did you mean when you said this and, Mom, can we talk about what you meant there? He doesn't even remember that. But there is an effect on the spirit of the boy that's there, and you can quickly turn the corner on this. I know you and I were chatting earlier that sometimes maybe a person would fear giving this to an older mother because it would shame her. What we have to see is that this works with a son who's 50 years old. We mustn't see this as an indictment where we blew it. With boys, it's always a new day. And one of the things I also point out, and this is a great analogy, suppose a 90-year-old father says to a 70-year-old daughter, honey, I realize I have failed you. I have failed to be a loving man. I have failed to love you in the ways you need. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me. I have failed to be the loving man that I should have been. And if he expresses that in genuine confession and humility, I don't know of any woman on the planet who will not find it in her heart to forgive that man. So too, boys are very responsive to respect talk mentioned here and there, even if a mother has failed. Or she can even say, please forgive me. She can be a 90-year-old woman toward a 7-year-old son. I did not intend to dishonor you. It was never my intention. I believed in you. That's why I was saying what I was saying. Can you find it in your heart to forgive me? I now realize that I dishonored you. There isn't a man on the planet who isn't going to say, oh, it's okay, Mom. Thanks for sharing that.
That's so funny.
Does that make sense?
Yes. I started reading this book a couple of weeks ago. Just about a day or two after I had had a conversation with my 10-year-old because he had made a choice that was very unsafe, I guess I'm going to say. It was very unsafe for both him and for his friends. And I told him that was a stupid choice. And that was just stupid. I said something like that. And as I'm reading your book, I thought, gosh, I hope he doesn't think that I think he's stupid. I should probably revisit that. So last night, as I was tucking him in, I said, oh, honey, do you remember that conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago about the choice you made that I said was really not a very smart one? And he said, Mom, you said it was stupid. And I said, yes, that's true. I want you to forgive me for that. I don't think you're stupid. And he says, oh, Mom, I already forgot all about that, but I can forgive you again if you need me to.
Yes.
Well, and it was
this
just...
is replete. Oh, that's powerful. See, he doesn't remember it.
No.
But then, in fact, he did remember it.
He remembered, and then he said, I already forgot about it, and I've already forgiven you, but if you need me to,
yes.
I'll forgive you
yes.
again.
Yes, yes. But notice that, and this is powerful, and this is why boys are very forgiving, quick to forgive, if mothers will just enter into that, and even say that that conduct was unbecoming to the man I believe you're becoming. I think that there was a safety issue here. I value the fact that you take risks. I value the fact that you have this courage to do certain things. Of course, I don't know the frame of reference. You can find the virtue in the vice. Always look for the virtue in the vice and speak to the virtue while you then confront the vice and make sure you distinguish his persona from his behavior, that he's not what he just did. And when you then speak to that, and that's what great leaders do toward other men. How is it that a three-star general motivates men in the next half hour to give their very lives in a battle? Is because they believe in those men, and it's about honor, and it's about duty. This is something that is very powerful within the male, and when you appeal to that, when you speak to that, you can confront that individual all day long on behavior that's not in keeping with who you believe that person to be. Mm-hmm. This isn't rocket science, but we've missed how to do that because when we're upset, we feel that we kind of have a license to just let it go, because if we speak it, then this is going to guarantee that whatever it is that he was going to do, it isn't going to happen. And so sometimes even mothers say, I don't care how contemptuous I am. I'm protecting this boy from killing himself, and I'm going to say it any way I want. Well, I just say you don't need to. You don't need to. You can get the point across in a respectful way, and truthful always carries its own weight. We don't have to be contemptuous to motivate a person to be respectful and loving. That's incongruous. That's like a bald-headed man selling hair restoration oil.
Well, that's true. And I did mention something about how he's just such a leader. And so my greatest worry for him is if he leads his friends who maybe don't make good decisions as well into making a bad choice. And so he has an opportunity there. So I hope that he lets that sink in a little bit. But it was funny to me to just know that he had forgotten everything. It was already past. It was water under the bridge. He had completely moved on. And for women or for girls, teenage girls, I'm guessing especially, that's not necessarily the case.
That is correct. That's exactly right. That's why this is a message that must not lead to shame in mothers. It's, as my wife said, it's always a new day. Particularly with boys, it's a new day. But it doesn't mean that we can ignore this either. And again, if we think through what this book is saying, it's using these situations to meet a need in the boy. Because here's what happens. The mother wrote, if my son does something that is not worthy of respect, I can quickly fall into this trap of disappointment and even disdain. There's the word, disdain. That's disrespect on steroids. It then gives me a feeling of, oh, he might never change. Then I feel like a bad mom because I feel indirectly that his behavior is somehow my fault or reflects on me. After this, I probably give off this attitude of disappointment, and I know only too well that my son can tell. Mm. The very hardest thing then is to see your son defeated and down. As mothers, she said, we practice and look for ways to love. But maybe more importantly, we should be looking for opportunities and ways to respect our sons.
Well, hearing some helpful tips today from Dr. Emerson Eggerich about how mothers can best communicate with their sons to convey an attitude of respect, even though we may have to be disciplining or correcting some misguided behavior. We're going to talk more with Dr. Eggerich when we come back after the break. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Great to have you joining us this afternoon. Well, I'm thrilled today to be talking to Dr. Emerson Eggerich. He's written a book called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. Dr. Eggerich is an internationally known expert in male-female relationships. In fact, he founded a ministry called Love and Respect Ministries, and he and his wife, Sarah, present Love and Respect conferences all across the country on video and to thousands of people each year. Dr. Eggerich has a PhD in child and family ecology. He has a Master of Divinity degree as well and pastored a church as the senior pastor of Trinity Church in Lansing, Michigan, for almost 20 years. This is his new book, Mother and Son, The Respect Effect, but it's not the first time he's written on love and respect. In fact, it's been a long-time ministry and a long-time passion of his. Dr. Eggerich, we're just trying to talk about these mothers who maybe feel like, well, they might have missed the boat. Maybe they've kind of messed up a little bit, and you keep saying not to feel shame of this, but take some action on how you can make maybe your relationship grow by talking to your son in a very different way. You said you have some examples of mothers who've tried this in various stages. What has been the result of those?
Well, and that's an excellent point. And we are not saying stop saying, I love you, love, 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 lovely. You keep, that's who you are. Keep doing that. But periodically think not just about what you feel toward your boy, but ask yourself, what does your boy feel in his own heart about how you feel about him truly in the area of the respect grid, and introduce a few vocabulary words. Back to the testimonies of mothers, one of the things that was interesting is in our conference, you know, we talk about a husband's need for respect. And Sarah, my wife, said, you know, you need to bring up sons relatively quick because, you know, women say, well, Dr. Emerson, you know, I don't feel respect for my husband. It'd be hypocritical for me to show respect when I don't feel it. I know you don't want me to be a hypocrite. You know, he hasn't earned the respect. He doesn't deserve it. He's not superior to me. That's the dictionary definition of respect. You show respect to your superiors. I'm not inferior to him. I'm not going to be treated like a doormat. I certainly am not going to, you know, give him license to do what he wants to do. I'm not going to come in as a cheerleader and pom-poms and just, you know, say, go ahead and do whatever you want for me to show you that I respect you. I certainly am not going to lose a sense of my identity and self and set the feminist team back. I think you really want us to return to male patriarchy and fear male dominance, but I'm certainly not going to do that, and I'm not going to subject myself to emotional abuse. But other than these things, Dr. Emerson, I'm really open to hearing what you have to say about this. Well, the crowd goes crazy, and then Sarah said, ask them, how many of them have sons? And, of course, almost everybody raises their hands, and I say, what I just went through, that mantra, is what your sweet daughter-in-law, who's going to be a loving, nurturing individual, the epitome of sweetness, but that's going to be her attitude, and that's going to be her message toward your precious baby boy. And he's just going to shut down. He's just going to close off. Well, what was interesting, this just really impacts, you know, women have an attitude toward their husband that's different than their attitude toward their boys, and they were very engaged with that and suddenly realized, whoa, and not only do I want my daughter-in-law to treat my boy with respect, but you know what? I don't know if I'm actually doing that toward my boy. And what they did is they went back and started applying this, and it was revolutionary. And Joe, we began to get emails, hundreds of emails, and this book is written around mothers who wrote me. This isn't about me telling mothers what to do. This book was mothers telling me what they did and the powerful impact and the sense of connection. Now, it's not a formula. Just as a daughter, you know, you can love your daughter as a father, and she's still going to have a meltdown because the boys' school said she didn't like her. And no matter what you do, she's upset. You know, don't see this as a manipulation, but a motivation over a marathon, not just a sprint to get your boy to make his bed today because you've got company coming tonight. This is not about you. This is about meeting his need. Well, anyway, these mothers began to write me, and there were incredible stories. For instance, one woman said, and this is important, this is not just for young boys. This is something that works with adult sons. She said, my relationship with my 22-year-old son improved overnight. Who knew that simple changes in words, the respect words, could make such a difference? Now I tell him how much I appreciate him and respect him, and he tears up. Wow, tears up. Before, I told him I loved him and got back, I know, Mom, I love you too. Then she said this, learning the right words to get my feelings across in a way they can be assimilated was so easy. Now, I'm not saying that all boys, you know, just want to hear respect or appreciate it or I'm proud of you. There are many boys who want to hear that they are loved, particularly if the family has been in upheaval. So again, this is not an absolute, but this is so overwhelmingly true for most boys. Same thing, that a girl wants to hear from her father that she is loved, but that doesn't mean that she doesn't want to hear that she's respected. Mm-hmm. But here's a mother of a 11-year-old, I believe he was. She said, when my son gives me his insight, I say, I really respect what you have to say, or I respect the way you handle that situation, or I really respect how you are taking initiative to get things done and follow through with. She then said, "These things have made my son smile like I have never seen." I talk more about respect with regard to sporting events and showing respect for other opponents. My son knows without a doubt that I love him. Now I feel he knows that I value him and value his ideas, which I may not have done so well in the past. Here's another. She said, "When I began the respect principles, he seemed calmer, less frustrated." This boy was, I think, 7 years old. "Less internally agitated. My respect seemed to release his internal tension. He has been coming up to me, and instead of acting out for attention, he will hug me, look right into my eyes, smile the sweetest, happiest smile, and say, 'You're the best mom in the world.'" Wow. "Nothing quite that wonderful has ever happened between us before. Being respectful to him has triggered his affection for me. I'm seeing beautiful and meaningful results." And then she said, "It's like a little miracle. The connection and affection I long to have with my son has finally come." Here's another, a mother of some older adult sons. "In talking to my sons on the phone, I thought I would try out the respect thing." And their mothers will always write me, and women say that, "And I don't want it just to be a tryout thing, the respect thing." Mm-hmm. "See it as meeting a need," but I understood what she was saying. She said, "Instead of always ending our conversations with 'I love you,' I said, 'I respect.'" And then she said, "I made it personal to their situations." Then she said this, one son got quiet and then said, "Thank you, Mom." And then she said, which really touched my heart, because again, mothers know intuitively that, and they can tell that there's a difference here. Another son, who was more distant from us emotionally and spiritually, also got quiet and then said, "I love you," which he seldom says first or responds to when I say it. And then she said this, "To me, that was awesome." And it should be seen as awesome, because it is awesome. It is clearly the male soul. It is what is in the man, just as the expressions of love warm and energize the female. And again, there's crossover. We all need love and respect. Don't get me wrong here. But the leaning is so dominant in the male and female that if we miss it, we're going to miss something precious. And when we get it and we begin to do what these mothers did, something most magnificent begins to happen. Does this make sense, Joe?
Absolutely. You know, there might be some moms listening who really want to start applying some of these concepts to the way that they speak to their boys as well. But maybe some feel that their relationship is past a fixing point, or their son have maybe dug themselves into a hole and doesn't deserve respect. How can you speak to those moms who are listening today?
Well, again, as we mentioned, no human being deserves contempt or disrespect. But we have this growing sentiment in the culture that we can lack civility if the other person, in our view, is unworthy of civil treatment. And that simply is what we call a non sequitur. It doesn't follow. It's illogical. And so, again, it does not mean that we feel respect toward the behavior that's not respectable, any more than a father should love the drug-taking daughter. I mean, I just love the fact that because I'm unconditional in my love, I love the fact that you take drugs. I'm to prove that I'm unconditional in my love. I love the fact that you're taking cocaine. I mean, we would say that's complete idiocy. Mm-hmm. That's totally asinine, because we all understand it doesn't mean that. But we are not very thoughtful as a culture. What are we really saying when we're saying something should be unconditional? Unconditional love and unconditional respect needs to be defined like this, that there's no condition, no circumstance, no situation that can get me to show you hate and contempt. Who you fail to be will not determine who I'm going to be. I'm going to be a loving and respectful person when I confront you for issues that are not lovable or respectable. But because you're failing to be who you should be, I'm not going to suddenly now fail to be the person God calls me to be. There is no scripture that says, "Thus saith the Lord, mothers, you can have contempt and disrespect toward your boys because they don't deserve it." Mm-hmm. And fathers, you can have hate toward your daughters because they are sinning against me, and therefore you have a right to be unloving toward them. This is ludicrous. So what we have to do is revisit it. See, part of the problem is women know that contempt and disrespect empowers them. They know that when they use their lips to speak disrespectfully, because they're not going to be violent with their boys, they threaten. And then they come to a point where they explode with these contemptuous words, and they see the tearing up in the boy, and he does what she says. And so she concludes, it works. No, that's comparable to saying, you know, a father who says, you know what, when I'm harsh and angry with my daughter, she shuts up. She quits this whining. She stops her, you know, drama. She makes her bed. I've got to scream and yell in harshness, and she does what I said. So, Emerson, this idea of loving is really not pragmatic. It's the unloving, harsh, angry way that gets my daughter to do what she needs to do. And, of course, we all know he's going to lose her heart. Just totally. He'll lose her heart. She'll never come home. She'll never be around him. When he's in a retirement center, he'll be sitting in that wheelchair drooling, and she'll never come see him. And so if we have this idea that I can be contemptuous toward the spirit of my son because it works, you're right. You win the battle, and you win the next battle, and you win the next battle, and you win the next battle. And then one day you realize, I won all the battles but lost the war.
Hmm. Well, I know there are some, you have some just some great tips on how moms can get started. And like you said, you have a couple of kind of broad overviews of some acronyms. Can you give us some indication on what would be a good way to get started? You even have a quick start guide at the back of your book. What are some practical ways that moms can get started in talking to their sons in a different way or taking this approach?
Well, you referenced the quick start in the appendix. In fact, I was going to start the book with the quick start because I know women are busy, but the publisher said, no, we want to put that in appendix because women will find it.
It's true. So, we look through the list and say, go.
Yeah, exactly. And so they knew that. I didn't know that. So the quick start was designed to say, just try this out. Put your toe in the water and you'll see. I mean, the same thing if I said to a father, just be loving in your demeanor toward her and express some loving things to your teen daughter and watch what happens. We believe that will happen with daughters, but we are not firm believers that it will happen with sons, and partly because boys are more independent and they're not as what we call expressive and responsive. They won't necessarily let you know what they're thinking. Girls, you can see it on their face. You know, it's like when mama's not happy, nobody's happy. We say when papa's not happy, nobody cares. You know what I mean? But apart from that joke, there is this cloaking, masking. You don't always know what the boy's feeling or thinking, and he doesn't necessarily want to talk about it. And so there is this, I think, misleading a little bit. But what we have to do is trust that when we do this, the boys are going to respond. And the quick start will allow you to taste of that very quickly. And you just need to trust and look for the nuances. Don't look for, oh, mother, you know, I'm going to write a poem to you today because of this. don't be looking at it from that standpoint. But you'll see some things. For instance, I say one of the ways you can respect your boys isn't by just saying it, but doing something with the boys shoulder to shoulder. For instance, with Will and Sam, let's suppose they're in the backyard playing catch. You go out for 15 minutes in a chair and just watch them play catch. You don't, write a radio script. You don't do some work there. You're not on the iPhone. You are sitting there just watching them, and you're not saying anything. You might say, hey, great catch. Wow, that was over the shoulder. Periodically praise or whatever, watch them for 15 minutes, and then get up and go back into the house. Don't even have to say one word. See, women have this idea if you have a quality relationship, there's a lot of talking heart-to-heart. And if that talking heart-to-heart and sense of connection isn't there, then the quality of the relationship isn't there. Because that's how God has made you as a woman. But boys bond shoulder-to-shoulder doing activities. And when they do that, there's a sense of camaraderie, a sense of companionship. There's an energy that comes into them. And so then I say to the mother, spend that 15 minutes watching them, then call them in the house for dinner and say, oh, by the way, you didn't pick up your clothes, you didn't make your bed, and you both of you have muddy hands, so I want you to take care of all of that. Okay, Mom, they'll go up and do it. And they will not resist. Why? Because you energize them. They're motivated, not by talking face-to-face, but by the shoulder-to-shoulder thing. They just felt honored. Many mothers will say, I just don't get that. And my response is, I don't expect you to get it. Any more than we can really fully expect a man to fully grasp the sentimentality of a woman. the first grader goes off to school and the mother's in the bedroom bawling her eyes out and her husband comes in. And it's not that he doesn't get a little bit of the sentimentality, but she's already got the boy going off to college. And this is a foretaste of things to come. The little baby's no longer there. The boy is six and life is over with. Mm. I mean, and women understand what's going on here, but men are not as sentimental. They don't always understand fully, and they kind of put that down. Oh, come on, this is no big deal. He's coming home in a couple hours. And they dismiss that because they don't get it. And because they don't get it, they have a tendency to say that it's not valid. Well, we do the same thing toward our boys and toward our mothers. If they don't understand, hey, look, there is something going on here between man and boy and what a man feels. Don't be quick to dismiss it simply because you don't get it. Let's take this by faith, meet a need, and watch what happens. Now, the quick start will allow you to do that right away, but the book overall is kind of like an encyclopedia, or it's more of a manual. What we did is we looked at everything in Scripture to parents about parenting that really specifically looks to parenting. I looked at the passages that dealt with parenting, not just go to a text and say, well, that'll apply to parents. Yeah, it applies to everything. But we looked at those things to parents, rightly dividing the word. And then we looked at all those passages dealing with males. For instance, be strong, act like men. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean to act like men? What does it mean to be strong, act like men? I unpack in depth what these gender differences are. Just as Peter says, live with your wives in an understanding way, since she's a woman. Precisely because of her femininity, I'm to be understanding of Sarah. There's something in her as a female that I need to be sensitive to and understanding of and empathetic with. And I'm under divine command to do that because my nature doesn't naturally do that. So what we did is we looked at all those passages dealing with men and even boys, and those passages dealing with parents, and did an overlay of this, and then said, okay, here's how you can move forward as a parent, meeting the need of your son. And then we also looked at the ages and stages, from 4 to 40, the younger boy, the older boy. And what I did is mothers always say to me, I need to know how to say this in this particular situation. So we've given a plethora of examples, examples after examples after examples. Now, when you read it, it's like a chicken cookbook, a recipe book on how to prepare chicken. It would be foolish to read that 50-page book and say, you know, the problem with this book, it repeats a lot of times about chicken. And when you read this book, you're going to hear me. There's only so many vocabulary words, but those vocabulary words apply in different settings. So the book is designed to take all these different experiences, whether it's discipline, whether it's instruction, whether it's on sexuality, whether it's on, you know, his conquest, his hierarchy, his sense of, you know, strength, all of these things that are in the boy. We're going to coach the mother how to speak respect talk in various situations that are going to usually arise on the heels of some conflict. So I've been thinking about this for many, many years, and as you pointed out, I've got my PhD in family studies, so I've tried to bring the scripture and the social sciences together in this manual for mothers.
Well, and that's exactly what it is. It gives some just great practical tips, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We just have to take a very short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Emerson Eggerich. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. We're just having a great conversation today with Dr. Emerson Eggerich. She's written a book called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. What would our relationships be like with our sons if we communicated not only unconditional love, but respect as well? And how would that change the way they approach their own life? Well, we're talking with Emerson Eggerich today about that. And his book is called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. And Emerson, one of the things that keeps rattling around in my head as we're talking is a lot of moms seem to kind of internalize the behavior of their children as a reflection of ourselves, who we are as a parent. If my child misbehaves, then I'm a bad mom. Can you speak to that a little bit and maybe how we can deal with that a little bit better?
Right. Well, no, and that's a huge thing. And we referenced that earlier when I quoted that mother who said, you know, and when he basically disobeys, she thinks it's her fault, that it's a reflection on who she is. So this is a huge, huge issue. And what we just have to challenge, particularly the Christ-following mother, is we need to bring our identity in Christ to our parenting. We need to know who we are in Christ as a person. And we bring that sense of, you know, identity, that sense of self-worth that we have because God deems us having worth. He loves us, and therefore we've got to work at this whole issue of our self-image being based on God's image of us. Because if we don't, then we're going to derive our identity from our children and their behavior. And when you put that onus on your child, you are then saying to the child, my self-image and my emotional happiness is contingent on your obedience. And I don't know of any person who can function long-term under that. This isn't easy for any of us. All of us take our parenting personal. We think that this is a reflection on us. But one of the things that's very interesting, Jesus Christ talked about the father of the prodigal. But what we don't pay attention is the prodigal had a brother. The prodigal rebelled against the father. The other brother was self-righteous and stayed home. Okay, it was the Gentile Jew a comparison. The Jews were self-righteous, angry, and judgmental, and the Gentiles were indulgent, hedonistic. That's the deeper point that Jesus is making, but he took it from a real-life situation. And what's interesting, though, is that he holds this father up as a replica of Abba Father. And I like to ask audiences that I speak to, would any church leadership bring this father in to coach us on how to be a good parent? And the answer to that is no. Mm-hmm. Because the one is indulgent and probably into drugs and everything, if they would live today, the older is just this righteous, self-righteous, religious fanatic that's just, you know, off the charts. I mean, ugly personality, mean-spirited. And we would say this father's totally failing. But Jesus Christ did not do that. In other words, we can parent God's way even if our children don't respond. This is an ironical statement to some people, but until we lock into that, then we're going to be victimized by our children's behavior, and they don't need that from us. They need to know that we're independent of them. They need to know that we love them regardless, that we're going to be respectful toward them regardless. You know, my children, would sometimes, you know, say or do things, and I would, you know, basically say, nice try. You know, I mean, I'm not giving into that. It's just not going to work with me. Or they say, you're the worst parent on the planet. And I said, thank you. I wanted to be number one at something. Thank you for that superlative, that I'm number one. Thank you. I didn't engage their guilt tripping. Did it mean that I didn't feel guilty? Yes, there were periods where they were very rebellious at various points. And Sarah and I remember sitting home on a Friday night, and she was saying, you're the PhD in family. What should we do? And I said, I don't know. And we both were overwhelmed with guilt that we were failing. But we rebounded because at the end of the day, God calls me to be a certain type of person, independent of my children. And I'm going to be this person whether or not you behave or not. And once we do that, what happens then is we create the most loving environment and respectful environment that best motivates our children to choose our faith and values. I mean, at the end of the day, you cannot coerce Sam or Will into believing in Jesus Christ, for instance. That's a decision they have to make. You can force them to go to church, but you can't force them to believe. You can force them to sing the song, but you can't force them to worship. There are these internal things that a child must choose for himself or herself. So the question really then that arises here is, what's the best way to motivate children? Because at the end of the day, we're not going to be able to manipulate them. We can only control our actions and reactions to our children. We cannot control those ultimate outcomes. Early on, we prevent the toddler from crossing the street. There is a great deal of control. Mm-hmm. But as they get older, we go from control to counsel to casting off. And the young man will leave father and mother and cleave to his wife. God calls him to leave his mother, and every mother needs to be understanding that she's preparing a boy to leave her. And if she has that attitude that she's independent of him a little bit and he's independent of her, he'll be calling her on the phone, and there'll be times she said, oh, no, I can't take this call again.
I look forward to those calls coming. In fact, I was just talking to a friend of mine about that just yesterday, about their son leaving for college, and hopefully, she said, he'll call me. And I said, I hope that that will happen as well, and that he'll just share good things that are happening, maybe ask me for advice every once in a while. But Emerson, we just thank you so much for taking the time to explore this concept with us of mothers and sons, and how we can see that that respect turn around and change our relationships. Dr. Emerson Eggerich, his book is called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect. You can catch how to buy it and a little bit more about Emerson on our website at myfaithradio.com. And if you just caught a snippet of this, you can go back to our website and listen to the podcast in its entirety. Dr. Eggerich, thanks for joining us today.
And thank you. And they can go to loveandrespect.com. And we have about 2 million now following us on Facebook. And we're putting out free information on this topic and others. So we'd love for your audience to check that out.
Excellent. And we'll put a link to that as well on our website. Thanks again. And thanks to everyone for listening today to Connecting Faith. Have a great day.